Well, I'm thrilled. I'm extremely thrilled, and I feel very privileged and honored. It's been a long time since I joined the United Nations, and I never expected that I would get to this level, and I feel extremely honored. A lot of people, I mean, starting with my family, they are very, very honored. They are pleased and excited for me, and I got calls from even distant family members I haven't heard from in a long time, and they are all just elated by that. And my peers and friends, they are extremely supportive. They are also saying that it's an honor and a recognition of the professionalism and the commitment that you have shown to your career, but also in particular in working for the United Nations values. So I'm very pleased with that.
So what are you bringing to the table as the Assistant Secretary General for Safety and Security to help tackle the crisis in the world today? For example, we have the Syrian crisis, problems in the Central African Republic, Burkina Faso, Afghanistan, and also in particular reference to Zimbabwe, your country, and the issues that it has been going through over the past few years, a decade or so.
Well, the thing is, of course, the United Nations Department of Safety and Security deals with ensuring the safety of all United Nations staff, irrespective of the situation in the country. That task is much harder and more challenging in conflict countries, as you have mentioned, and there are a lot of those. So the job that I'm going into is to help contribute to ensuring the safety of the staff. In terms of resolving the conflict, of course, the parties to the conflict, the Secretary General, and all the other parties have to work on that. What we know is that when you are in the conflict zones, the duty of ensuring that you're carrying on the United Nations work is far more complex. Therefore, the protection of those staff, ensuring that they have the humanitarian space, the development space to do the work that is needed in those situations, is fundamental. And working with the host governments is very important because they're at the front and center of protecting those staff. So what I bring is really a very keen understanding of the work of the United Nations across the board. I've been with the United Nations Development Program, the development arm of the United Nations, for over 25 years. I have also worked in peacekeeping operations with the United Nations in Kosovo, etc., and covered Asia and Southwest Asia with critical countries like Pakistan, Afghanistan, Nepal, all that went through conflict. So my keen understanding and awareness of what happens on the ground when the United Nations is there, I think will help me a lot to bring added value to the work of UNDSS.
Just going back to, you know, to Zimbabwe, you grew up and got your first degree in a patriarchal Zimbabwean society. How did you make it, especially as a mother, now that you are where you are? How difficult has it been to get to where you are, and what really inspires you to keep going?
Yes, you're right. I grew up in not only in a patriarchal society, but in a society where there was institutionalized racism before the independence of Zimbabwe in 1980. And I owe a great deal of my success and the person who I am actually to my father. My late father, who died in 2009, was an incredible man, a simple school teacher and highly religious man who did everything. The way he raised us, the girls, is I never felt different from my brother. He raised me as a human being, as a person, and his words to me were always, "You're smart. I am not a rich man, I'm a poor man, but I am wealthy in terms of my brain, and the legacy that I give you, your inheritance, is your brain. You use it, and you go to school, and you succeed, and there's nothing that you cannot do." And I think I was so shocked when I went out of that cocoon of protection of family to the outside world to realize how patriarchy and, gender discrimination was so strong. I was lucky also that he sent me to a boarding school. I went to boarding school at Asha, very young, at about 11 years old, and it was an all-girls school. I thrived. I never really saw myself as a girl with less than or needing to, but only when I entered the work world and realized, oh my goodness, gender relations are difficult, racism is difficult, but because I had been raised with confidence, self-confidence, it was much easier for me to fight. I became a fighter from within. And that strength has been very important. And my father inspired me a lot in terms of, with very little, he did so much. And he made me feel, you know, this is it. So I was always sure of what I wanted to do. I never dreamt, when I grow up, I want to be a mom. At first, I would say, when I grow up, I want to be a poet. oh, I want to be a writer. And then I said I wanted to travel the world and do this. And so those dreams were fundamental. And being a mother, being married, was incidental. And when I got married, where I wanted to go, if I met someone who didn't understand where I wanted to go, they were not worth of my time. So I have been lucky in that I got married to someone who understood me and was very supportive and has been and continues to be supportive. And when I had my daughter, I was working actually at that time at the University of Zimbabwe. I have to say I was lucky because I had a job which allows you a little bit of work-life balance. I could take my baby in the bus net to my lectures and leave them there and teach while I'm, you know, still being a mother. And they were, you know, academic holidays where you can spend more time with family. Not many women have that, so you do need childcare. You do need a government that has laws that protects parenting and allows for the facility and subsidies to allow women at every level to be able to afford childcare so they can pursue their dreams and their career aspirations.